So we are in a new section in the book of Judges. We started last week. The first portion of the book of Judges reveals the deliverers. God turns Israel over to their enemies because they worship and they serve the Baals and the Ashtoreths. They are under the bondage of the Moabites or the Philistines or the Amorites for sometimes 20 years, 40 years, 80 years. And then God raises up deliverers that are called judges that set them free. And that is Barak and Samson and Gideon and so many others that we have studied. When we get to the end of the book, he's showing what the time of the judges was like and what the children of Israel did to the children of Israel. I like to say that what God cares about for you and me the most is the way we treat each other, the way we treat our family and friends and coworkers and acquaintances, and that if we are mistreating anyone, that we should repent from it immediately, that we need to walk in love. We're to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and we're to love our neighbor as ourselves, and the world will know that we're Christians by the love that we have for one another. Well, these five chapters that end the book of Judges are the opposite of that. They are horrible things that Israel does to Israel during the time of the judges. If you weren't with us in our study last week, the Danites didn't like the portion of the land that they had been given. Their tribe boundaries, they didn't like. There were a lot of tough people there. They were supposed to go and subdue it and drive them out of the land. They didn't want to do it. So they went and they stole some land to people who were dwelling safely and securely in a place called Laish. What a horrible, awful thing for them to do. Just to go and destroy these people that were living securely in a town just so they could take that land because it was easier to take from them than it was to take from those that God wanted driven out of the land. Well, if you think that's bad, you ain't seen nothing yet. And remember that this time, there's several hundred years of the times of the judges, the Bible tells us what the time was like. And that's given to us in chapter 17, verse 6, where it says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." Just so you know that he's telling us that that's how it was, look at the very last verse in the book of Judges. That's chapter 21, verse 25. "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." 17 introduces this last section that has no judges in it at all. 21 ends it. So he introduced this section by saying everybody was doing what was right in their own eyes, and he ends the section by saying that. So what we're finding here is the horrific levels to which men will reach to when they are doing what is right in their own eyes. It doesn't mean every person that is doing what is right in their own eyes is going to rise to horrific levels. But it means that men will. We're looking back to a time that is 1400 BC to 1000 BC to 1100 BC. And in these times, there were brutal times. There wasn't the news media that we have today. Men treated men in horrible ways. Men treated women in horrible ways. I wish I could say that the world has come to a place where that doesn't happen anymore. But when I think just to what ISIS has done, when ISIS came on the scene and the brutal things that they did, the burning of the Jordanian pilot, do you remember that? The beheadings of the Christians that they would march down by the side, the raping of the women in the cities that they went into. When men are seeking their own way, when they have power, when there's no one to hold them in check, they will rise up to horrific levels. And Israel is the same exact way. They rise up to horrific levels here. I also think it should be pointed out that oftentimes it is said of the Old Testament that Israel wanted to write a history. They wanted to claim the land. And so they wrote the history while they were in Babylon and wrote about that which would give them a claim to the land. If they were writing their own history, they would have never have included chapters 18, 19, 20, 21, 18, 19, 20, 20, yeah, 21, 17 either, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 in the book of Judges in that. they would have never have told the horrible things like Judah did in the book of Genesis. And the flaws of Abraham and the flaws of David would have, it's been said that history is written by the winners of history. Well, the Bible tells a different story about the heroes. It tells us that Gideon makes a golden ephod, and he brings Israel, after delivering them, he brings them into idolatry. And that's what we find. These chapters would not, they weren't in Babylon going, this is going to be great chapters. This is really going to make people feel nationalistic and really want to go back and take the land. When we read things like this, we realize that there's something honest being told to us. And that this is what happens when men don't have a king. And remember, in the time of the judges, God was supposed to be their king. So when it says it was a time that they didn't have a king, but men were doing what was right in their own eyes, it's saying they weren't following God's direction. They would seek God and God would give them some direction, but then they would go beyond it. They would push the boundaries and they would do these horrible things that God would never want them to do. That's what we find in this section. So do I have you curious yet? Should we go ahead and read about some of these awful, horrible things? All right, so let's start in with verse 1 of chapter 19. And it came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel. It's almost like he's using that phrase as a little bit of a get ready now. It happened in these days when there was no king in Israel, that there was a certain Levite staying in the remote mountains of Ephraim. He took for himself a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah. A concubine in the Old Testament is not a piece of farm equipment. You can buy concubines today, but it's not the same thing. A concubine was, and many of the Old Testament, even biblical heroes like Abraham had concubines, Jacob had concubines. Concubines was a woman whom you were semi-formally married to, but didn't have the privileges of a wife. So you would have a wife, you would have a concubine. A concubine became more or less property for you, a sexual object for you, where a wife had all of the benefits that come along with being a wife. I think it's fair to say that God never desired that they would have concubines. In fact, we know that the family is described by Jesus when he said, it was said that a man and a woman, for this reason, a man and a woman shall leave their father and mother, and the two will cleave together and become one flesh. That was God's design. We don't know that this Ephraimite had a wife. We don't know exactly why he took her as a concubine instead of a wife, but he takes a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah. But his concubine played the harlot against him and went away from him to her father's house in Bethlehem of Judah, where four whole months. So she plays the harlot. I don't know if that means just an affair or if she actually took up prostitution. Verse 3, then her husband arose and went to her and spoke kindly to her to bring her back, having his servant and a couple of donkeys with him. You needed to know that he had a couple donkeys. So she brought him into her father's house. Remember, donkeys were a status symbol in their day. Today it's Maseratis, in their day it was donkeys. And when the father of the young woman saw him, he was glad to meet him. She kind of wanted this thing to work out. I mean, his daughter's in harlotry. So now the father-in-law, the young woman's father, detained him to stay with him 3 days. So they ate and they drank and they lodged there. Then it came to pass on the fourth day that they arose early in the morning and he stood to depart. And the young woman's father said to his son-in-law, refresh your heart with me a morsel of bread and afterwards go your way. And he sat down and the two of them ate and drank together. And the young woman's father said to the man, please be content to stay all night and let your heart be merry. So when the man stood to depart, the father-in-law urged him to lodge there again. Then he arose early in the morning on the fifth day to depart, and the young woman's father said, please refresh your heart. So they delayed until the afternoon. So the father just keeps on wanting him to stay. Doesn't want him to leave, which might be understandable. So he wants him to stay there. And when the man stood to depart, he and his concubine and his servant, his father-in-law, the young woman's father said to him, look, the day is now dwelling towards the evening. Please spend the night. So the day is coming, the day is coming to an end, lodge here, that your heart may be merry. Tomorrow go your way early, that you may get home. And the Levite probably says, no, you're just going to do the same thing tomorrow morning. However, the man was not willing to spend the night, so he arose and departed and came to Jebus, opposite Jebus. Jebus is also Jerusalem. So they came opposite of Jerusalem. That is Jerusalem, it says, which with him were two saddled donkeys. His concubine was also with him. So it's late in the day now. They come to the area of Jerusalem, and they've got to have a place to stay. And the whole thing about the dad saying, stay and stay and stay, was just to say he detained him so long that finally got frustrated one day and left when it was night. And they were near Jebus, and that day was far spent. And the servant said to his master, come, please, and let us turn aside into the city of the Jebusites and lodge in it. You remember that David eventually takes Jerusalem from the Jebusites. But his master said to him, we will not turn aside here into the city of foreigners. It probably would have been better had they done that. It couldn't have been worse, I'll tell you that. Are we not the children of Israel? Notice the distinction there. Are we not the children of Israel? We will go on to Gibeah. Don't do it. Don't go to Gibeah. So he said to his servants, come, let us draw near to one of these places and spend the night in Gibeah or in Ramah. And they passed by and went their way, and the sun went down on them near Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin. And they turned aside there in the lodge in Gibeah. When he went in, he sat down in the open square of the city, for no one would take him into his house to spend the night. They didn't have inns in those days, and they relied on the hospitality of people. You could also go stay in the city gates, and that was a place where you could sleep, and there would be a semblance of safety that was there. Just then an old man came from his work out the field at evening, who also was from the mountains of Ephraim. And he was staying in Gibeah, whereas the men of that place were Benjamites, so he's not a Benjamite. And when he raised his eyes and saw the traveler in the open square of the city, and the old man said, where are you going, and where'd you come from? And he said to him, we are passing from Bethlehem in Judah towards the remote mountains of Ephraim. I am from there. I went to Bethlehem in Judah. Now I am going to the house of the Lord. But there is no one who will take me into his house, although we have both straw and fodder for our donkey, and bread and wine for myself and for your female servants and for the young man who is with your servant. There is no lack of anything. So in other words, they wouldn't take him in even though they didn't need to give him anything. Just need to give him a place to stay. And the old man said, please, peace be with you. However, let all of your needs be my responsibility. Only do not spend the night in this open square. Hospitality. Come stay at my place. Let me take care of your donkeys, your servants. Let it all be on me. So this foreigner, non-Benjamite, has the gift of hospitality. We could talk a little bit about how we as Christians are supposed to be hospitable. What that means, each person has to seek out for themselves. But this is a tremendous point of hospitality to say to a stranger, come and stay in my house. So he brought him into this house and gave fodder to the donkeys, and they washed his feet and they ate and they drank. And they were enjoying themselves. Suddenly, certain men of the city, perverted men, surrounded the house and beat on the door. They spoke to the master of the house, the old man, saying, bring out the man who came to you, your house, that we may know him carnally. This is like Sodom and Gomorrah, where they surrounded the house and demanded that the angels, who they thought were men, would be sent out so they could rape him. So now, this is the time of the judges, is 500 years after the time of Sodom and Gomorrah. And now it's Israel. The Gibeonites are Israelites. Now it is Israelites who want to rape this man. But the man and the master of the house went out to them and said to them, no, my brethren, I beg you, do not act so wickedly. Seeing this man has come into my house, do not commit this outrage. Look, here is my virgin daughter. I had said earlier in the book of Judges, what is it with these people wanting to give their daughters away to people for awful things? And the man's concubine. So he said, take my daughter, take this man's concubine. Let me bring them out now, humble them, and do with them as you please, but this man do not touch do not do such a vile thing. Well, it would also have been vile to the virgin, his daughter, and also to the concubine as well. Again, we see men doing what they want to do. We see the heights that they will rise to in their vileness when there is no one to hold them to account. There in Israel now, there's no law, there's no king, there's no judge right now that's over. We don't know what judge it is during this time. He's gone back and going over the time of the history. But because this is a lawless time, they're doing these horrible things. But the men would not heed him. So the man took his concubine and brought her out to them, and they knew her and abused her all night until morning. And when the day had begun to break, they let her go. So the Levite is every bit as complicit in this as the guys that raped her. And the women came as the day was dawning and fell down at the door of the man's house where her master was till it was light. And when her master arose in the morning, he opened the door of the house and went out to go his way. And there was his concubine fallen on the door of the house with her hands on the threshold. And he said to her, "Get up and let us be going." Now that's compassion for you. The guy that is the bright and shining one in this story is a guy who's not even from the area. Not him, but somebody else. But there was no answer. So the man lifted her onto the donkey, and the man got up and went to his place. When he entered his house, he took a knife, I told you so, laid hold of his concubine, and divided her into 12 pieces, limb by limb. Didn't think it was going to be this bad, did you? He thought I was joking. Some of you said, how can you say something's horrible? It's in the Bible. Or something in the Bible could be a horrible chapter. This is a horrible chapter. Limb by limb, and he sent her throughout the territory of Israel. So he sends her throughout all of Israel. And it was so that all who saw it, no such deed had been done or seen from the day that the children of Israel came up from the land of Egypt until this day. Consider it, confer, and speak up. So he sends these body parts out with a challenge to them. Verse 20, or chapter 20. So all the children of Israel came out from Dan to Beersheba, as well as from the land of Gilead. And the congregation gathered together as one man before the Lord at Mizpah. Well, that's a pretty good response. They get upset. They get the pieces of this poor concubine delivered to them, and they gather together, and they come to Mizpah. And the leaders of all of the people of the tribes of Israel presented themselves as an assembly of people of God, 400,000 foot soldiers who drew the sword. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel... Now, there's a distinction here. The two parties in this are the children of Benjamin and the children of Israel, even though Benjamin is part of Israel, had gone up to Mizpah, and the children of Israel said, "Tell us, how did this wicked thing happen?" So the Levite, the husband of the woman who had been murdered, answered and said, "My concubine and I went into Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin, and spent the night. And the men of Gibeah arose against me and surrounded the house that night because of me. They intended to kill me, but instead they ravished my concubine so that she died." I love that he doesn't tell the story accurately. It's just like people would do today. They kind of cook up the story a little bit. They fix it up so it looks a little bit better. He doesn't say, "So I grabbed my concubine and I threw her outside and they ravaged her." He leaves that part out. So, okay, so verse 6. "So I took my concubine he didn't say that. So I cut her to pieces and sent her throughout all of the territory and the inheritance of Israel, because they committed lewdness and outrage in Israel." All right, so far, it's a gross act, but so far, so good. Look, all of you are children of Israel. Again, this kind of nationalism. All of you are children of Israel. Give your advice and counsel here and now. So all the people arose, one man saying, "None of us will go to his tent, nor will any go back to his house. But now this is the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot. We will take 10 men out of every 100 throughout all of the tribes of Israel, 100 out of every 1,000 and 1,000 out of every 10,000, and make provisions for the people. And when they come to Gibeah in Benjamin, they may repay all the violence that they have done on Israel. So all the men of Israel were gathered against the city, united together as one man. I'm not sure this is, I'm going to say this is not the right response. I'm not even going to say I'm not sure it's not the right. They gather together as a nation now, and they need to take this, they need to do something. And there's no doubt that they do. So what should they have done? They should have gathered these guys together, and they should have gone and demanded the men that did this horrible thing. And they will do that, but from the very beginning, they set themselves against Gibeah. Instead of going to Gibeah and saying, we don't believe that you guys were all involved in this, but we want the men who were, they make an accusation and stand against the whole town. They draw a battle line where maybe a battle line shouldn't be drawn. In a much different way and in a much different application, I wonder about the church today. I wonder, and you guys know that we are as far from political as a church as we can possibly be. That's just not our thing. It's not what we do. But I wonder if the church today, evangelicalism in general, isn't drawing lines down, political lines, and making a mistake and making the battle in the wrong place and battling the wrong things. Quite a few years ago now, there was a group of people around the United States that began to boycott Disneyland because they were friendly towards homosexuals. They began to put some homosexual things in their shows, and this offended many Christians. So Christians felt like they needed to do something and to maybe change Disneyland from helping out, and so they boycotted it. We did not take part of that. We were invited into it as a church, and we did not take part in it because I felt like that was the opposite of what we needed to do. Why did we want to draw up a battle line against Disneyland? How is that ever our call? We are to take the gospel of Jesus Christ. And how is it that we take a group of people like homosexuals and we identify their sin as being greater sin than someone else? Someone who's involved in fornication. Someone who's living with someone and in fornication. Why would we not, if we're going to boycott Disneyland, why wouldn't we boycott everything that has anything to do? But we identify one group. And today, I think those who are homosexuals don't see us as a place that really cares about them, as a place that really loves them, as a place that wants to see them in heaven. Instead, we draw battle lines against them. We're not fighting the right people. I think it's a great mistake in evangelicalism across the board today. I think we're drawing the wrong battle lines. And I think people are not being drawn to Christ because of it. The reason it's a great mistake for us is because we are the salt of the earth. We're to show the love of Christ everywhere we go. Jesus came and sat down and ate and drank with sinners. He didn't come in and say, I'm boycotting you. I ain't sitting down at this table. Bunch of sinners in here. He came to those who were sinners. And shouldn't we do the very same thing? Maybe we should have embraced Disneyland. Maybe we should have got together as a church and said, how can we bless them and show them that we love them and we love those who have chosen the gay lifestyle, the homosexual lifestyle, but we want to see them come to Christ and we want to see them set free from this, that we really would care about them and love them and demonstrate that love. I think there's a lot of examples that I could talk to now. I don't want to go into it greatly because I want to get these three chapters done. But I think they make a huge mistake here when they draw these battle lines up to go against Gibeah. Then the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribes of Benjamin saying, what is this wickedness that has occurred here? Verse 13, now therefore deliver up the men, the perverted men who are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and remove the evil from Israel. As I said, that's the right thing to do. That's what they should have done. I don't know that they needed to draw in battle array against Gibeah and then demand it. They just should have went and said, we want these men. We want justice done. They're trying to do what's right, but the children of Benjamin would not listen to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. Instead, the children of Benjamin gathered together from their cities in Gibeah to go to battle against the children of Israel. And from that city, in that time, the children of Benjamin numbered 26,000 men who drew the sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeon, who numbered 700 select who numbered 700 select men. Among all of the people were 700 select men who were left-handed. Every one of them slung a stone at a hair's breadth and did not miss. Sounds like they were really good. And it is really interesting that people who are left-handed often are more athletic, often are a little bit better at things. So they got, you know, 700 left-handed guys that throw a sling and don't miss. Now, besides Benjamin, the men of Israel numbered 400,000 men who drew the sword. All of these were men of war. So the tribe of Benjamin was a well-armed tribe. Then the children of Israel arose and went up to the house of God and inquired of God. Again, that's a good move. And they said, which of us shall go up first to battle against the children of Benjamin? The Lord said, Judah first. It's a leading question. Which of us should go up first against them? So now the priest, I take it, is giving them their answer from God, Judah first. So Judah is to go up first and attack them. However, wouldn't it have been better for them to say, what should we do? God, give us direction. I wonder if we give limited prayers to God. Which car do you want me to buy, God? You know, instead of saying, what do you want me to do? We kind of lead in those prayers. So the children of Israel rose in the morning and encamped against Gibeah. The men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin, and the men of Israel put themselves in battle array and fought against Gibeah. Then the children of Benjamin came out of Gibeah, and on that day cut down to the ground 22,000 men from Israel. And the people, that is, the men of Israel, encouraged themselves and again formed a battle line at a place where they had put for themselves in array on the first day. So they go out to battle the first time and they lose 22,000 men to the Benjamites. So this thing has just gone from bad to worse. Now there's civil war taking place, and now Israel is trying to do justice and has swore they're not gonna go home until they get justice, which also falls in line with don't make vows. We'll get that a little bit later on in the same story. But why make a vow like that? Why not just say, let's go get justice? Then the children of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until evening and asked counsel of the Lord, saying, shall I again draw near for battle against the children, the brother of Benjamin? The Lord said, go up against him. So the children of Israel approached the children of Benjamin on the second day. And Benjamin went out against them from Gibeah. And on the second day, they cut down to the ground 18,000 more of the children of Israel. All these drew the sword. Then all of the children of Israel, that is all of the people, went up and came to the house of God and wept. And they sat there before the Lord and fasted a day until evening. And they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. This may very well have been what God is doing. We don't know where they were. We know that throughout the time of the judges, they served the Baals and the Ashtoreths. But now, after these great losses, they find themselves genuinely seeking God. So the children of Israel inquired of the Lord. The Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days. It's not long after this that we don't find the Ark of the Covenant anymore. Once David, the second king in Israel, comes on the scene, when Solomon comes, we don't find the Ark anymore. It's gone. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days. He was the high priest, saying, shall I yet again go out and battle against the children of Israel, my brother Benjamin? Notice, against the children of Israel, Benjamin. Or shall I cease? And the Lord said, go, for tomorrow I will deliver them into your hands. Then Israel sent men in an ambush around Gibeah. The children of Israel went up against the children of Benjamin on the third day and put themselves in battle array against Gibeah at other times. And the children of Benjamin went out against the people, and they were drawn away from the city, and they began to strike down and kill some of the people as at other times. So they had initial victory. In the highways, one of which goes up to Bethel and the other to Gibeah, and in the field, about 30 men of Israel. And the children of Benjamin said, they are defeated before us as at first. But the children of Israel said, let us flee and draw them away from the city and to the highways. And all the men of Israel rose from their place and put themselves in battle array at Baal Tamar. Then Israel's men in ambush burst forth from their positions. So it was a So it was a trap. They got them out away from the city. They came out from their hiding places, flanked them, as it were, to defeat them. It says, as it was a plan in Gibeah, and 10,000 select men from all of Israel came against Gibeah, and the battle was fierce, but the Benjamites did not know that disaster was upon them. And the Lord defeated Benjamin before Israel, and all the children of Israel destroyed that day 25,100 Benjamites, all those who drew the sword. So the children of Benjamin saw that they were defeated. The men of Israel had given ground to the Benjamites because they had rallied on men in ambush who they had set against Gibeah. And the men in the ambush quickly rushed upon Gibeah, and the men in the ambush spread out and struck the whole city with the edge of the sword. Now the appointed signal between the men of Israel and the men in the ambush was that they would make a great cloud of smoke rise up from the city, whereupon the men of Israel would turn in battle. Now Benjamin had begun to strike and kill about 30 of the men of Israel, and they said, "Surely they are defeated before us, as it was in the battle." They're giving us the details now of the ambush. But when the cloud began to rise from the city in a column of smoke, the Benjamites looked behind them, and there was the whole city going up in smoke to heaven. And when the men of Israel turned back, the men of Benjamin panicked, and they saw the disaster had come upon them. Therefore, they turned their backs before the men of Israel in the direction of the wilderness, but the battle overtook them, and whoever came out of the city, they destroyed in their midst. They surrounded the Benjamites, chased them, and easily trampled them down as far as the front of Gibeah towards the east. And 18,000 men of Benjamin fell. All those were men of valor. And they turned and they fled towards the wilderness in the rock of Rimmon, and they cut down 500 of them on the highways. And they pursued them relentlessly up to Gidon, and they killed 2,000 of them. So all who fell of Benjamin that day were 25,000 men who drew the sword. They were all men of valor. But 600 men turned and fled towards the wilderness of the Rock of Rimmon, and they stayed on the Rock of Rimmon for 4 months. And the men of Israel turned back against the children of Benjamin and struck them down with the edge of the sword, from every city, man and beast, all who they found. So they set fire to all of their cities that they came to. That's a little bit of an overreach. God says, go up and battle against them. They defeat them in battle, and then they go and they destroy every city in Benjamin, killing men, women, and children. Never God's plan, never what God wanted them to do. They set out and did it on their own. God had never told them to do that. We got 11 minutes. Now the men of Israel, I'm happy that we're going to get this done. We're not done with the horribleness yet. Don't let down yet. There's still horribleness. So the men of Israel had sworn an oath in Mizpah saying, "None of us shall give his daughter to the Benjamin as a wife." So they kill their wives, their children, all the Benjamites. They just go in war, this fury of war, and they destroy everybody. And then in their fury and their anger, they make an oath. "We're not going to give any women to the Benjamites. We swear." Comes again, don't make oaths. Don't swear. Don't put yourself under further laws or bondage by making oaths. Just do what you're going to do. Jesus said, don't take oaths. Just let your yes be yes and your no be no. Then the people came to the house of God and remained there before the Lord until evening. They lifted up their voices and wept bitterly and said, "O Lord God of Israel, why has this come to pass?" "Because you did it." Now they go to the house of God and Benjamin's almost gone. There's only the 400 men that are living in the wilderness now from the tribe of Benjamin. They've annihilated a tribe because there were certain wicked, perverted men that they should have found to be able to give justice to. They slaughtered the innocent with them. And now they say, "Why has this come to pass in Israel, that today we should be one tribe missing in Israel?" Now suddenly they're filled with remorse and they want to do something about it. So it was on the next morning that the people rose early in the morning, built an altar there, and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. And the children of Israel said, Who is there among all the tribes of Israel who did not come with us to the assembly of the Lord, that he made a great oath concerning everyone who would not come up to the land of Mizpah, saying, he shall surely be put to death? Meaning, you can't, who is there in all of Israel who said that they would let their daughters be married to the Benjamites? The children of Israel grieved for Benjamin, their brother, and said, one tribe is cut off from Israel today. What shall we do for wives for those who remain? I've got it. I know what you could do. Break your stupid vow. Your stupid, prideful vow that you made in the midst of winning the battle when you're wiping everybody out. We're not going to give any of our wives or daughters to the Benjamites. Just break your vow. It says, seeing we have sworn to the Lord that we will not give them our daughters as wives. So they said, what one is there from the tribe of Israel that did not come to Mizpah to the Lord? And in fact, no one had come to the camp from Jabesh-Gilead. Jabesh-Gilead wasn't there. The town didn't come out for the battle, to the assembly. Can you imagine what's going to happen here? For when the people were counted, indeed, not one of the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead was there. Oh, they didn't make the vow. So the congregation sent out 12,000 of their most valiant men and commanded them, saying, go ahead and strike the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead with the edge of the sword, including the women and children. And this is the thing that you shall do. You shall utterly destroy every male and every woman that has known a man intimately. So they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead 400 young virgins who had not known a man intimately, and they brought them to the camp at Shiloh, which is the camp in Canaan. Then the whole congregation sent word to the children of Benjamin who were in the rock of Rimmon and announced peace to them. What a horrible, awful thing for them to do. To fall upon a city in Israel. Again, people living innocently. It reminds us of the Danites attacking Laish, killing men and women and stealing away their virgin daughters. So Benjamin came back at that time, and they gave them the woman that they had saved alive from the women of Jabesh-Gilead. And yet they had not found enough of them. And the people grieved for the Benjamites because the Lord had made a void in the tribe of Israel. I'm not sure God did that. I think they're blaming God for something that they did. I wonder if this doesn't happen in our lives. Remember, they're doing awful, horrible things. This is just a sampling of the stuff that they're doing. God is judging them and handing them over to the Moabites and the Philistines to judge them. And they're saying God has made the Benjamites void. Then the elders of the congregation said, what shall we do for the wives of those who remain, since the women of Benjamin have been destroyed? What kind of thing do people do when there's no law? So they said, there must be an inheritance of survivors of Benjamin, that the tribe may not be destroyed from Israel. However, we cannot give our wives and our daughters, for the children of Israel have sworn an oath, saying, cursed is the one who gives his wife to Benjamin. I know, why don't you guys just go ahead and give yourself up to the curse? You did this. I said, I'm going to give my daughter to him and I'll take the curse. Then they said, in fact, there is a yearly feast to the Lord in Shiloh. So this is all done in secret. It's a yearly feast to the Lord in Shiloh, which is north of Bethel at the east side of the highway, which goes up from Bethel to Shechem, the south of Lebna. Therefore, they instructed the children of Benjamin, they took the rest of the guys, saying, go and lie in wait in the vineyards and watch. And just when the daughters of Shiloh, these are the people that are living in Shiloh, their own people, come out to perform their dance, then come out from the vineyards and every man catch a wife for himself from the daughters of Shiloh, then go to the land of Benjamin. Then it shall be when their fathers and their brothers come to us to complain that we will say to them, be kind to them for our sakes, because we did not take a wife from any of them in the war, for it was not as though you have given the women to them at this time, making yourselves guilty of the oath. So we're stealing your daughter so you don't have to give them, so the curse won't come upon you. What a stupid solution. What a wicked solution. And the children of Benjamin did so. They took enough wives for the number of those who danced from these girls that were going out and dancing. What a horrible thing for these girls. They caught then and they went and they returned to their inheritance and they rebuilt the cities and they dwelt in them. So the children of Israel departed from there at that time, every man to his tribe and family, And they went out from there, every man to his inheritance. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Was I right? Was I exaggerating? The height that men will go to when they do what is right in their own eyes. I'm not saying every man will go to that height, because I think from human standards, there are good people, like the one guy in this story. And I'm not going to include the Levite that had his concubine raped and killed, because he put her out there. The one guy is the guy that showed hospitality. One guy out of this whole chapter. That we would say to God, Lord, we just want to live wholeheartedly for you, and help us that we might truly shine as a light, that people can get to know you, so that men don't rise to these awful and horrible heights. I'm sure there's other applications that the Lord can give to each one of us. Stand with me, would you? Let's pray together.